trying it again.
I'm going fishing.
Good morning, good day, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. There is so many choices out there for all those to come true on. And it depends if you're listening live here in the wonderful Northport area, or if you listen via the interweb out there, clicking on the Listen Now on kdwradio.com. There is so many choices. Now, keep in mind, if you're up north and there is a local radio station near you that you would like to hear our shows broadcast on, just have them call us down here at the mighty WKDW. We have shows for sale. Yeah. So you can, you know, if you're a local radio station somewhere, you want some good programming, give us a call. We have that. Now, what we also have that no one in the world has except me, and that's a Robert. There are many Roberts, but there is only one Robert, and he is here live and indirect and almost there. You know, I was talking to RJ, and I said, you know, I've been getting so tired, I'm almost to the point of incoherency, and he says, how would you tell? And I was like, wonderful. And so our commander-in-chief, our production extraordinaire person in the gold and gilded chrome towers of power, RJ is in command and control.
And I am here, yes.
Yes. And we're kind of all suffering from the same thing. It has been a heck of a season.
It has been.
I mean, we've had more people in the store than we've ever had. The radio station is on fire. I mean, there's thousands of people clicking in to listen on the different programs. And everything is going so well. I think that's why all the stuff going wrong in the background while we try and keep this together is, I think that's what's so maddening about it. Everything's going along so well. You should just be happy and jovial and, oh, wow, this is terrific. And in the background, you're just totally, utterly frustrated.
I never knew that there was a 25-hour day, but apparently that's what's going
it,
on.
It does
that's
exist.
That's what's going on in my life, yes. Is a 25-hour day.
And, you know, once you figure out there could be 25 hours in a day when you didn't notice it, it brings us into the fishing aspect of that. This segues right into you cannot look at the calendar and figure out where the fish are going to be. Because a couple years ago in January, the Peace River was 2 feet over flood stage. This year, it's at 2 feet, period. It's 9 feet below flood stage. And last year, January was cold. Yeah. It was chilly, January.
Yeah, it was.
This year, January feels more like June.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
We went through a bunch of chilly spouts in December, and the water got down into the 60s. It's back up in the mid-70s.
Yeah, it's definitely made it confusing but exciting at the same time.
What's weird is I don't think the fish are following the water temperatures the way they should be.
No.
It's like the water's still cold. It's not cold. Now, 4 or 5, 6 feet down, it's still pretty chilly, but the surface temps and the shallow water temperatures on the flats are literally June temperatures, May temperatures.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fish are eating cut bait as well or better than they're eating live bait. I would say actually better. And there's no reason for that. They should be kind of keyed in on the white bait right now. Thread fins, anything moving around and shiny and flashy and fast. That should be what's going to get their attention. But if you really want to catch more redfish, more snook, a chunk of dead bait.
Chunk of dead bait, you know, and fresh or frozen. They don't seem to be being real picky about it because there are times where they seem to want this or that. But right now it's ladyfish, mullet, and cut pinfish, and they're eating them all.
You know,
it's strange.
We were at Luigi's last night. If you haven't been to Luigi's restaurant, Port Charlotte, you're missing out. It's my favorite restaurant, pretty much. It's very comfortable. They always give you a lot more than you can eat, really. At least for me. I'm sure some people can eat all that, but not me. But we do these fishing club meetings, seminars at Luigi's each month. And Carl was talking, Captain Carl from KB Backcountry Charters. Now, if you know Carl, you know it can be hard to get a hold of him. Come to Fish and Frank's on Wednesday. He works on Wednesdays. If you want to book your trip, he's at the store every Wednesday.
Hard and for him to avoid a phone call when it's right in front of him.
It's hard to avoid a phone call when you're standing there looking at him. I don't know why a guy who makes his living off of getting phone calls doesn't do well on the phone, but that's kind of Carl.
Yeah.
Amazing on the water, just not so good with his telephone stuff. But we were talking about what the fish were hitting, and if he nets up group of bait and there's thread fins or greenbacks in it, he's throwing those back in the water. What he's keeping right now is any kind of ladyfish. Pinfish is the big bet that he's using right now. Now, the weird part about it is Carl has a habit of always cutting the tail off of a pinfish. He wants to slow them down because pinfish are fast, and they like to hide around rocks. They're not only very quick, but they're really adept at hiding. And so he's got his pinfish out there. He's got a hook in him. He tosses them out. He's using like a quarter ounce weight or a bigger split shot. But when the fish are coming up to it, he's out there, he's got a school of fish, he knows they're there, but he gets one redfish, and it's like 20 minutes, he hasn't got a hit, starts bringing the baits in, looking at them, and he's noticing that the fish have scales missing, like something grabbed them and just rubbed the scales off. Neither redfish or snook have actual teeth to really take a bite out of a piece of bait.
Right.
But when they kind of clamp down on it and pull it, it'll leave a mark. You know, it'll scale the fish off. I mean, just like if you pulled some of the scales off, you can actually see the mark on that fish. And he's trying to figure it out. Why aren't they actually just taking the bait? Why aren't they eating the pinfish? Why they come up mouthing it and kind of chewing on it a little bit and then going away? So he's sitting there wondering what the heck's going on. Why is this happening? So he brings one in. He can see the marks from where the fish grabbed it. But it was like the fins were getting in the way. Because pinfish probably originally started out being called pin cushion fish. Because the dorsal fin is like a whole group of little sharp needles sticking up.
Oh, yeah.
And then they've got the little pec fins on the bottom, too, that have some pretty sharp edges. And if you've ever grabbed a pinfish, you're going to know, if his dorsal's up when you grab him, you've got a bunch of little puncture marks in your hand.
Yeah.
Little tiny holes. So he took his scissors and cut the dorsal fin as well as the tail and the pec fins off.
Okay.
So he's got rid of all the sharp fins. Now he's got the hook in them, a little over the anal opening, kind of up a little bit and in from the anal opening. And the fish is that way, with that weight on him, the fish can be upright. But with no tail, dorsal fins, you know, is it the pec fins one on the bottom?
Anal fins.
No, the one in front by, you know, right below the eyeballs, so to speak.
Yeah, pec fins.
On the side of the body.
Yeah, there's ones on the side. The pinfish actually have a little bit more down on the bottom.
Those are still considered anal fins. I don't know the exact terminology for those ones that are up kind of on the breastplate. But
right. All right. So anyway, he takes scissors and cuts all those off. Tosses it out there. Boom. Redfish. And he thought, well, maybe that's just a fluke. So the fins are all still on the other baits. So he baits up another one, cuts fins off, throws it out there, boom, another fish. And so he starts bringing the other lines in, cutting the fins off, throwing them out. Pretty soon they're steady catching redfish. He catches a couple of snook. He's got a couple he throws really close to the mangroves. He's been fishing mostly potholes, openish water, but not, you know, right up against the mangroves. So he throws one up by the mangroves, no fins, same thing. Gets a couple of snook. They get a bunch of redfish. I think he ended the day with like 35 redfish and a dozen snook on a four-hour trip.
Which, I mean, it's one thing that amazes me about him is the way he likes to experiment and try to figure things out, you know, kind of like the way you've done in the past and taught me to do, but I'm not very good at it. But the perplexing thing to me is, like, crabs are a redfish's main, like, candy, you know, and all these other fish species have so many sharp spines on them. Why is it that the spines would be the bothersome part? You know, it confuses me that taking the spines off would make that giant of a difference. It's a little weird.
RJ?
Well, we're talking about a pinfish now.
Uh-huh.
Looks like a bluegill, about same shape overall, is similar more to a bluegill. A lot of people get them confused with needlefish by the name. Mm-hmm. This is more tall, like a bluegill shape.
And so in order for the redfish to grab a pinfish, he's got to get him from underneath or from the top. And what's the first thing his tongue is going to come in contact with is those dorsal fins. But
they eat baby stingrays and get that barb from the stingray stuck on
them. I guess it
depends
on where they get it. The sensitive part of a redfish's mouth is the tongue.
Okay.
So he's getting nailed in the tongue and he's spitting it back out again, would be my guess.
All right, because...
And it might also be the way that he's rigging it, you know, the way the fish is sitting and the redfish is attacking it. That one I don't know, but I suspect...
But now...
I suspect it has to do with how the fish is trying to pick up the bait and being confronted with these sharp spines.
That makes the most sense.
That definitely makes more sense.
If he had put the hook in another part of the pinfish, those fins might not have been an issue.
Right.
But because of where he was hooking it up, as the redfish went to grab that bait, they were getting stuck.
Yeah. And that makes a little bit more sense, you know, because, I mean, maybe if he was hooking it through the nasal passage or the eyeballs, totally different scenario. Because, I mean, you know, it's definitely opposite of what you would expect usually when you're hooking up bait fish, because usually when I fish pinfish, it's almost always through the nasal passage or the eyeballs, you know, or I'm putting them right through the back under a bobber.
Well, yeah, that makes the most sense, RJ. How he's rigging it means the fish are going to hit it a different way than if you had the hook on somewhere else. So that sounds good. Okay.
That's very plausible.
You know, when you're out there listening, what we're trying to do is give you stuff that we're confronted with. You're throwing a pinfish out, and you know the redfish want to eat it, and then they're not. Whenever you bring a bait in that's been out for a while, inspect it. Don't go, oh, he didn't get hit, throw it away. Literally, whether it's a shrimp, a white bait, a pinfish, a crab, anything, you want to look at that bait. Had something come up and mouthed it? Are there marks on the bait saying, well, a fish was going to eat it and then didn't? Or are there no marks on it, which means there might mean there's no fish there, or they're just not going to bite at all. But a lot of times you would be really surprised. Now, this goes through if I'm fishing in freshwater for bass or walleye or whatever. When I bring a live bait in, I want to take a minute to inspect that, whether it's actually dead bait, live bait, any kind of bait.
Right.
I want to look and see if there's any marks on it after it's been sitting down there for a while. Because if there's marks on it, it just means I rigged it wrong. Something was wrong with what was there. The fish were trying to eat it and didn't. But if there's no marks on it, it could mean no fish or bad day or whatever, bad luck. But if there's marks on that bait, that means something's wrong with what you did to it. You hooked it in the wrong place.
And I think it depends on the species you're going after. You know, a redfish strike or a snook strike is in a second or two. You know, the actual process of the fish hitting the bait goes over in a second, so it's a wham. And if there's a pain, it's an eject kind of thing would be my guess. Where you get something like a sheep's head that chews away at things. So it's going to depend on how you rig it.
Well, exactly. If you look at the bait and a third of it's gone because something was chewing on it, obviously they saw the hook was over there, and they only wanted to get so close to it.
That's right.
So thread your hook on. Hide that hook a little better. Change the color of your hook. Now, there's one people always forget about. If I'm out there and I'm throwing a red jig head with a piece of bait on it and they're not hitting it, maybe I'll switch to a chartreuse or a black head. I'll change the color of my lure, my jig, to see if the fish would most likely hit it. You know, you could be, the water's a little kind of mixed stain. So I'm throwing a brown jig head or jig through there, and the fish aren't eating it, so I'll switch to, say, a pink and white or a chartreuse and white, and all of a sudden I'm getting a hit. By just simply changing the color, I'm still working a jig, still working it the same way, but I changed the color, boom, I started getting a hit.
Well, now, the other aspect of that is keep in mind, red's the number one seller in jig heads, wouldn't you agree?
I would say, yeah, it's probably red.
And then chartreuse would be a fairly close second.
Yeah.
How many hundreds of guys went by that same bush casting that same color jig head at those fish, and now all of a sudden you're picking some obscure, like you said, pink or something like that? You know, you've said it over and over again to change colors and try something different. That's why we always say your freshwater lures work great down here, because sometimes it's something the fish has never seen before and gets excited about it. Changing that jig head color up could make all that difference in the world.
And what do you think? Changing your lure, your jig color would be a big deal or not?
Yeah, I think it makes a difference. I'm not sure why. I've heard a lot of theories about why fish are affected by different colors. Part of the problem is colors change as they get further into the water column. So, you know, how is that color reacting in the water column? And then I think Robert's right. Fish get spooked by somebody flinging a jig and splashing it off the top and it's red, and the next time they see something red, they don't want to go near it because their experience has been that wasn't natural that I was seeing. And then you throw a different color in there and you don't have that effect.
Right. But George left for a swim and he didn't come back after eating that red thing.
That's right. Yeah.
So what happened? Like me, he's going for a pack of smokes in Canada.
And never came back. Yeah.
I'll be back soon, guys.
Left all the kids in the mangroves and never came back.
Yeah.
But it's true, though. If you change up colors, if you're not having an effect, pretty much you got to figure the fish are there.
All right, my question for you listening audience. There's about 18,000 people listening right now. How many of you, when you're fishing with a piece of bait, change the color of your hook? Not of your jig, not of your lure, of the hook. Do you always use the same hook? Do you have like a silver eagle claw, a black VMC, a red owner hook? How many of you thought about changing the color of your hook? In my tackle box, I have black, I have chartreuse, and I have pink. I have a couple of bronze because I use the Mustad 37-140 if I'm using a cork or a bobber, which is a bronze hook. And I might have a couple of silver hooks. If it's sheephead season, I'll have some gold hooks. How many out there have different color hooks, or do you use the same hook, same color, and maybe have a couple of different sizes of them, whether they're gold or whether they're black or whichever color? How many of you, literally, RJ, is changing your hook color something you think about?
No. I'd have to say I get a zero on that test because I don't think I've ever changed hook colors. No, I've used different colors, and I haven't noticed a difference. For a while, the rage was red. Oh, it looks like the bait fish is bleeding out, and that attracts fish to it. I don't know if I've ever seen.
I think it did for a while, for the first couple of years.
Yeah, or it might have just been in our perception too, and so I don't know. But I've not noticed a difference in hook colors, and so I've never changed hook colors in my experience.
Yeah, I've never changed them. I mean, I've used black and I've always used chrome. Those are the two.
The silver or the black.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're not saying that changing the hook is wrong. We're just saying that Robert and I haven't changed hooks.
Uh-uh.
And Frank has.
I literally have in my tackle box at least three hook colors when I go fishing. And most common thing for me to do is when I'm rigging the lines up, I put a different color hook on each line and then see which one starts to get hit. And I can always change the other hooks over. Now, sometimes it doesn't make any difference at all, but every once in a while, it's a dramatic difference. Now, mind you, I have different color line on every one of my rods, mostly so I know which one's which. But every once in a while, one of those line colors, even when the hooks are all the same color, one of the line colors can make that rod catch more fish. Or maybe it's just a lucky rod for the day. But I'm in this for the percentages. You know, if I say, okay, the same color line works, same color hook works, same color leader works, and it'll work or not. Well, if I can up my odds 10, 20, 30%, you know, so I get 1 in 10 fish more, 3 in 10 fish more. Is that not worth having a little bit of different colors on there?
Oh, it's huge. You know, and it's, what does it do?
I don't know about huge, but to me it makes sense.
No, it makes sense. Why wouldn't pretty significant.
I want to have every possible conceivable odds in my favor?
Absolutely. You know, and it's one of those things where it's like, for me personally, I teach people about the different colored jig heads, not so much the hooks, honestly.
Nobody ever teaches about the hooks. I know I'm the only nutcase in the world. It's like I'm the only nutcase who puts lead weights on rods. There's a lot of weird factors about being me. But all I'm asking is, does it make sense?
It absolutely does.
Absolutely makes sense.
But we teach people all the time about changing things up. It's like, you know, there's three of you going fishing. One guy starts off with a bobber, one guy uses a sinker, and one guy uses no sinker. See who gets the more bites, see where those fish are at in the water column. It makes sense to increase your odds by changing that hook out. So I agree with you. It's just one of those things I just don't think about.
To me, the joy of fishing is it's unexpected. There's dozens and dozens of variables that you can play with. There's no way it can be boring. You know, if you just go out with the same lure or the same bait and you cast in the same place, you're not getting the joy of fishing.
Well, you might be getting the joy of fishing, but you're not getting as much of the joy of catching as
yes,
you should.
Yes, yes, there you go. There you go. Catching fish is important when you go fishing. I hear guys that go out and they say, well, I just went out to be in nature, you know, but the corners of their mouth are turned down on the way back in. And the guy that goes out just to be with nature and has got, several good fish in the boat, or he's caught a whole bunch of fish, his corners of his mouth are turned up. So, you know, where do you want to be in all of this?
Well, go out, have some fun, relax, and enjoy yourself. But if you can do a little bit more variant, and I've been saying a lot over the last couple of years, the more inconsistently I fish, the more consistently I catch. And do I really care what's on the end of the line? Do I have to use this lure because it's my favorite lure? Do I have to use this hook because that's the hook I use? Realistically, those are your rules. They're not rules set by, you know, fishing, the governing body of fish, Poseidon, Lord of the Sea. Speaking offshore fishing. Tell me about it, Robert.
Well, the wind finally started to lay down a little bit the last several days, so a lot of guys actually went out and are going out because I think we got till Saturday or Sunday when the wind starts to pick back up a little bit more.
And the temperatures are going to drop considerably.
Yeah.
We're looking at upper 30s for one or two nights.
That's not until, what, Tuesday or Wednesday, next week?
Yeah.
But we got a weird front coming in today, I think, where it's going to be, and it's a weird front. It's not going to quite make it to us, but it's coming from the northeast and coming down, versus normally our major fronts come from the northwest and cut across. So it's bringing in some weird air, but it's kind of almost calmed down our atmosphere where it's not been blown 20 to 25 with gusts of 30 to 35.
Right.
So quite a few guys have been offshore, and along with this clear nights and these really super clear warm days, the water temperature has come up both in the harbor and the Gulf.
I don't know. I don't think you got that much time.
No?
Tonight, 8 mile an hour winds. Friday, high of about, what was that, 79. So it's still going to be nice and warm. We got six northeast winds, 6 to 11 miles per hour, increasing 13 to 18 by afternoon.
Oh, geez. Okay.
So we're facing almost 20-mile-an-hour winds by tomorrow afternoon.
So they sped up the forecast.
Yeah, because Saturday, 21. Sunday, we're looking, it's...
Windy. Well, the guys have been going offshore and doing pretty darn good the last 2 days.
Oh, wait a minute. Sunday, Sunday, a chance of thunderstorms, but calm, wind becoming 5 miles an hour.
Okay.
So Sunday, the wind is supposed to be down. It's supposed to be very calm, but you're going to have some thunderstorms, and that's the reason it's going to be calm, is in the middle of the thunderstorms.
Yeah.
But,
and plus, you might have residual wave effect after if it blows that hard for a couple days.
Yeah, it's still saying Sunday night, 5 mile an hour. Monday, 6 to 10.
Okay.
Cool. But so the high is like 70 instead of 80.
Nice.
So by Monday, the air temp's going to drop 10 degrees.
Okay.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I'm ready for another round. It's just weird. December, the water temp's in the 60s. In January, the water temp's in the 70s. If this cooled spell lasts a week, the water will be back down in the 60s.
Right. The cool part about it right now, though, is that there's king mackerel out there. We're hearing of some king mackerel. Guys are seeing them. Only a couple guys have caught them, but they're actually seeing them skyrocket out there anywhere from 5 miles out to where the guys have been catching most of the grouper, have been in like that 75 to 85 feet of water, which is, what, roughly 25 to 30 miles out. You know, they're seeing kingfish out there in fairly decent numbers. They aren't seeing as many bonita as they were 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago when they managed to get out there. Because there's like two guys that fish offshore regularly that I trust with their reports. And these guys they have nothing to gain. And they actually show me pictures. So there's proof.
Okay.
You know, they've been getting into some nice red grouper out there in that 70, 80, 85 feet of water up to about 18 pounds. Most of them have been just in that 23, 24-inch range, not fire trucks, but nice legal-sized red grouper. And, of course, everybody who's been out in the last several days has caught at least one legal-sized gag grouper, but, of course, they closed on the first. It's kind of like deer season. Mm-hmm. You'll see that buck all the way up until the opening day of deer season, then he's gone. And gag grouper have been kind of the same way. Nobody's catching any, nobody's seeing any. All of a sudden, everyone's talking about some of these gags they're catching out there.
It's the day after season. You're driving home from deer camp, and you're going down the road, 8-point buck, 12-point, 10-point. They're everywhere, and you're just... leaving camp, it's like they know when it's safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, okay, I can come back out.
Yeah, exactly.
How does a gag grouper know it, though?
I have no idea. You know, but a couple guys have seen a few cobia out there. I've heard of one legal-sized cobia caught out there that swam by the boat, and the guy managed to hook it. So a mixed variety, but a lot of guys are going out today. We had a lot of guys in this morning buying frozen bait, and yesterday afternoon bought a lot of frozen bait, to the point where it kind of messed us up on our frozen order this week.
Well, you can call them back and reorder, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
We keep the bunch of boxes over by the freezers. We got like 9 freezers over there, 10 freezers. And we keep a big load of boxes over there. I came in this morning, and there was a big pile of boxes. But when I got there today, the boxes were pretty much gone. I was like, wow,
uh-oh.
Cool. Yep. Better make a second phone call, Robert.
Exactly.
You know, Robert mentioned skyrocketing kings. And if you've ever heard about tarpon, you've heard about free jumping. And this is where a fish will just, for no reason at all, jump straight up out of the water. could be they're feeding on something, but a lot of times we find they do it maybe for fun, or maybe it's part of impressing their mate, or I don't really know why these fish would all of a sudden take off and go up 5-6 feet out of the water. Tarpon do it, king mackerel do it, mullet obviously do it.
Right.
And people always want to know, why are they doing this? And the truth of the matter is, no one knows for sure. Occasionally, it's something they're doing with feeding. They're coming straight up through a pot of bait fish and jumping out of the water because their speed is so excessive to trap the bait, it launches them into the air. But several times I've seen fish launch where I can see them and know there is 100% no bait there. It could be there's a big predator chasing them. But again, I've watched fish, king mackerel, tarpon, mullet, and there is nothing around them chasing it that I can see. And I mean, I can see for quite a ways around it.
Right.
They just skyrocket. They just jump out of the water for, I think, because they can. Maybe it impresses the girls. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, and the majority of time that I've seen tarpon free jumping, very seldom have I seen, like, bait being chased or spit out or pushed into the air. With the kings, I'd say it's about 25% of the time that I've been able to see it well enough to say, yes, he was chasing a bait, but there's been so many times where they've been close enough to, like, actually startle me while you're spacing out under the flat waters and not see a single bait fish and go, why did he just launch 10 feet into the air? You know, no sign of a predator, no sign of a food source, just, hey, that was neat. 3-foot king mackerel just launched 10 feet in the air. How about that? You know, and it's kind of bizarre.
Yeah,
so I'm with you on that.
I have no idea. I have seen larger fish launch from being underwater. And the only thing I can think of is you get a mirror effect when you look up at the surface, depending on the angle you're at. You know, it looks like you're looking at a mirror and you see yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a possibility that they think they're still in the school and
they think they're swimming up into water and it turns out there's no water.
It could be. Could be. But I have no idea. I just find it spectacular. I mean, one of the great events is seeing a school of kings, for example, and a couple of them come out all at once.
And what we're talking about is when they're going straight up in the air, not
yeah.
when they're kind of launching themselves across the surface the way a dolphin or you would picture tuna or bonita just kind of going across the surface in kind of a long jump to continue going the direction they're going. This is almost straight up when
yeah.
this happens.
Yeah, it's like a submarine launched a missile.
Yeah. And it's really weird.
And you see the fish, and they come up in all their glory, you know, like you say, 5-6 feet out of the water. And
you've been underwater and saw
them. I've seen them go up and do that, yeah.
Okay. So
I like the idea of the mirror, though, because, I mean, if there is bait, let's say, 5 feet down where they're not dibbling on the surface, and that fish is coming up through it and crushing
it. He's seeing it behind him. He's seeing it in front of him when it's actually behind him.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty interesting thought. I mean, definitely gives a little different perspective or spin on it.
Right, but I've also seen that happen in a boat in, you know, fairly choppy water, and you're not going to have a mirror effect with the choppy water like that. So, you know, who knows why they do it, but I'm glad that they do.
So my favorite skyrocketing king story, if you haven't done it, this happens most of all right around evening. In my experience, usually one of the biggest times see fish skyrocket is just before dark. I don't know why. Maybe that's the mirror effect.
More mirror, yeah. Definitely
a more
dusk.
Of a mirror effect just before dark. But out there fishing for king mackerel and fish are going off up in the air and you're catching them. And then all of a sudden it starts getting dark and you're trying to reel in. You get something tangled up in your line. And you're pulling on it, and all of a sudden, it's a man-of-war tentacle. Now, you don't know this until it starts burning your wrist, your fingers. You're pulling it in. You think it's like monofilament. It's dark out. And, oh, man, this starts hurting. You're trying to get it off you and off the boat. And you finally get clear of it. You think everything's all good. and Mother Nature calls, so you unzip, and you're feeling a little better there, everything's working good, and something falls off your shirt and lands down there. Now, this can actually start to really, really burn. This is a very sensitive area.
Robert and I are leaving right now because we can't handle the pain image.
You know, oh you didn't know the Man of War tentacle had gotten, like, stuck on your T-shirt, a piece of it. And you're finally getting a little relief because all the pressure's built up. And then all of a sudden the burn starts.
And this is a true story, eh, Frank?
No.
Wow.
And then you've got guys on the boat because they say ammonia helps, you know, cure the burn. Guys offering to do that, and you're begging the women, no, maybe you, not him, no.
You never know where this show is going to go. That's the fun.
I don't know why that came into mind. There's nothing, pure fantasy. Okay. Anyway.
Wow.
There's a lot of redfish around right now.
There is.
Did that give you something to think about?
Yes, it did.
They're both have their hand in their lap.
That's got me scarred for life. Literally.
You mean like a chainsaw scar?
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Thanks. All right. So back to the redfish.
Right.
Back to the redfish.
You don't want to go to his chainsaw scars?
No, we don't want to hear the chainsaw scars. So that can come later after we recover from the Man of War story.
The redfish have been really surprising out there. I mean, generally speaking, January is pretty much rat red season under normal, old normal conditions. January and February traditionally are just small redfish. You're hard pressed to find anything over 18 inches. And right now, they're catching them from 12 inches to 18 inches in a lot of the creeks and over on the west wall and the east wall. But you get out on the flats on the east wall and west wall, and you've got fish that are 21 to 28 inches. You get down into Turtle and Bull Bay, you got fish up to 30, 32 inches.
Even bigger.
Yeah. I mean, up into Lemon Bay, heading towards the Tom Adams Bridge, some guys have been catching some 28 to 32-inch redfish right there around the Tom Adams Bridge while fishing for sheep's head.
Now, school me on this, but the bigger redfish leave the harbor and the inshore
November, December,
and they're out to spawn or whatever it is that they do out there.
No, they come in to spawn.
They come in to spawn.
August, September, they start coming in. October's the biggest spawning month. But they can start coming into the harbor in late August through September, and then October's the big spawn month. And then they're going to leave sometime after that. So you're figuring October's the peak of the spawn, so they come in starting late August, mid-late August, all the way through September, do their spawn. They're going to leave November-ish, but it could be all the way into December. What Robert and I have theorized is that we have a lot more stocked redfish. The redfish that they're releasing from the CCA and these redfish and snook groups. Snook is one of the few fish that actually lives here. It lives, born, lives, dies pretty much all harbor, or Tampa, or Sarasota. Where it's born from, they don't vary much more than a half a mile either way. But they will go out to spawn, and once they're done spawning, they will go right back to that area. But with redfish, they're meant to leave and go traveling. They could end up as far away as Massachusetts, Texas, you never know where a redfish would be. But a lot of the salmon that they release in different areas and stuff don't go to spawn. They get bigger, but they're doing different things. A normal salmon's going to run up the river it was born in and every year to do its spawn thing or whenever they do it, you know.
Right.
But with these redfish that are dropped in the harbor as of a certain size, they could be anywhere from 4 to 12 inches long, from what I understand, when they stock them.
Yeah.
So what if these fish don't know what they're supposed to do or don't have that imprinted and because a redfish grows about twice as fast as a snook or a redfish, or a snook or a trout. A snook or a trout's going to get maybe 7 inches in the first year. Redfish can get 14 inches in the first year, maybe even more. What if they don't imprint well once they're that big? Once maybe they don't know to come back here. Maybe they don't even know to leave. They don't know where the schools come in. They were hatched somewhere else, growing to a certain size, and hatched in one body of water usually, or their parents were in one body of water. They're either hatched or whatever in a, you know, what do they call it? Hatchery. And then they're taken somewhere else to grow. What if these fish don't know they should leave? What if they're residents now?
I like the idea of that.
Yeah, I'd go with that too. And it goes back to the salmon theory, that a lot of the thought was they would raise these salmon, they'd put them back in the water, and then they would do the natural thing, go out to sea, get big, come back in and spawn. Well, they didn't come back because they had no connection to whatever the river was that they would normally go up and spawn where they had been born and washed down.
And I think what they found was a certain percentage will and a certain percentage would not.
I think it was a real small percentage that came back up because they're not doing that type of restocking anymore, at least on the Pacific side. Atlantic side, they're still stocking Atlantic salmon. But
yeah, when I could see all of that. I mean, They get that stuff imprinted into their brain through who knows what kind of senses, but they know how to smell it and gravitational pull and all that stuff that we'll never really truly understand. So I could see hatchery fish just wanting to stick around and become a homebody rather than doing what it's supposed
Maybe
to
do. Maybe not knowing that they're supposed to be a traveling fish.
Right.
Well, here's a point, and you made it about snook staying home. You know, they're living. So a hatchery snook is not going to have any problem with being raised in a tank.
No.
He's put out. He has no desire to go anywhere because he was put in the tank. So yeah. You take a redfish that is designed to migrate, and they grow up in a tank where they don't go anywhere. They don't travel very far at all, you know, whatever the distance or the diameter of the tank is. And now you put them out in the harbor, and they're pretty much going to stick, is going to be my guess, to some kind of diameter in relationship to where they were. They have no reason to travel.
Because every year
they haven't traveled. But when they were small fry, they traveled great distances.
And right now, we've seen every year more and more year-round big redfish.
Yeah. Yeah, the traditional, this is how you fish for redfish, and this is when you get them. That
is kiwi rat red season.
That's right.
You see almost no adult, sub-adult redfish, mostly rat reds.
Yeah, I mean, you could fish all day and be lucky to find that one fish over 20 inches, so, even that one fish over 18 inches for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty interesting. I like that idea.
So this is the number one January we've ever had on shark catch.
Oh my gosh,
there's
yes.
more sharks here than I could ever. I would lose so much money if I, because guys said, well, we want to go shark fishing. I'm like, well, your odds are against you. And no, they're not. If you want to catch some nice sharks, 5, 6, 8 foot long, this is better than it was last May and June.
Oh yeah, definitely. And they're not the giant sharks, like you said, you know, up to 7, 8 feet, and that's even on the bigger side, but they're still incredibly good quality fish. There's black tips out there up to 5.5 feet being caught from the intercoastal out through the passes, whether it's Captiva Pass, Boca Grande Pass, even hearing of some up in the Venice jetties there. A couple guys have been catching from there. I mean, a true 5 to 5.5 foot black tip is a brawler. I mean, it's truly a beast.
It's like a 6 foot tarpon.
Oh yeah, every bit of it. And they do jump. And you know, people jump, think that it's a spinner flips. Shark, and this time of year it could be a spinner shark or it could be a black tip. But with as warm as it is, I'm going to still go with black tip. But either way, they both jump.
And they do one thing that tarpon don't do, and tarpon don't do full flips.
Or corkscrews.
Or corkscrews, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tarpon are beautiful jumpers, but These black tips can get downright insane. It's the difference between watching a normal ski jump and watching the extreme idiot ski jump.
Right. I mean, basically, you're fishing for a small mako.
Yeah, this is your tarpon on drugs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been pretty amazing. And land-based guys have been doing fairly well on them, and so have the boat-based guys. The sandbar sharks have moved in. It's been a pretty incredible season already for sandbar sharks, which they always show up in late November and early December, but not always in good numbers. And sometimes it's only for a couple weeks because it's water temperature related and food related. And even though we didn't have an incredible mullet run this year, I think we had a few more mullet make it out of the harbor because quite a few of the mullet guys just have quit since last year because the prices never went up real high. Red tide, whatever other excuses happened, we had a few more mullet leave the harbor and actually turn around and make it back in, and those sharks followed them in. So rather than it being that 2 week to 3 week window of chasing sandbars, both from the beach and from a boat, we're into what, probably think week five or six. You know, it's
if you hook them up, how do you tell the difference between a sandbar and a blacktip?
The black tip is definitely a little bit more streamlined. When they're that big on a black tip, his black tips have faded out pretty well. But they've definitely got a little bit more of a pointy nose, a little bit slender of a body. The sandbar shark is almost always confused with the bull shark on a very, very regular basis.
Now, will a sandbar jump?
No, sandbar will not jump.
So if it jumps, it's definitely not a sandbar.
Correct. To the best of my knowledge, I've never, ever heard of a sandbar shark jumping.
It's another reason why you don't want to just, you know, haul butt and real get that shark in. Give him a little chance to perform. You know, if it's a black tip, he's got some spectacular jumping to do.
Oh, man.
And if you're sitting there just cranking, if he wants to come up and jump, stop cranking for a minute. Let him have some fun.
Absolutely.
Enjoy the show. That's why you're there. Yeah. Now, if it's in the middle of the night, I get that. But if it's got any daylight at all where you can see this going on.
Yeah, a lot of these fish are being caught during the daytime. That's the even better part about all of it.
Reel a little bit, pause for a little bit, reel a little bit, pause for a little bit. Give them time to have some fun. You know? It seems like occasionally sharks even skyrocket like a king mackerel or a tarpon, but most of the time, the only time they do that is when they're on the hook. Not a rule, but as a guideline, I'd say it's less often a shark would skyrocket than a king mackerel or tarpon.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the only ones that seem to do it on a semi-regular basis that are similar to the tarpon and the kings are your black tips and your spinner sharks. I've seen them do it without seeing any bait around. You know, they just jump and corkscrew into the air and come crashing back down without a hook in them or without any food source around them. So it makes it really cool versus most of your other sharks. They definitely, like great whites, they'll breach, you know, but it's always been food related. But mako sharks, I haven't heard of any free jumping. I'm sure that other people have, but I don't have any experience at all with witnessing makos except for one little one in California that I saw.
All right, RJ, so what's your takeaway from today?
Oh, I'd say go out there, mix it up, have some fun. Don't do the same thing over and over and over again. Because it worked on Monday doesn't mean it's going to work on Wednesday.
I like that one.
Any takeaway, Robert? We only got about a minute left.
Yeah, I'm with RJ on that one. Move around a lot and just experiment and change things up because there's nothing that it should be like it was last year.
That's right. It certainly is not last year.
And if you're going to go out, you have two people fishing, try and start off with two different baits, or at least if you're both using the same type of bait, one rig up one way, one rig another way. Get your best odds in there, your best chances of catching fish. Fishing Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and RJ in command and control. We'll see you next week on This Week in Fishing. Yeah, it has a name. I don't remember it often. We don't use it, but it has a name.